Hello, and welcome back to this week's episode of the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast, sponsored by those lovely people at Natural Grower, who supply plant-based products for both organic and chemical-free gardening and your houseplants. Crammed with certified organic growing power, if you're looking for amazing results with all of your fruit and vegetables, your flower beds, your lawns and houseplants, then Natural Grower's award-winning certified organic peat-free compost and fertilizer knock the socks off chemical products. All products are certified organic, 100% chemical-free and 100% peat-free. And those lovely people at Natural Grower have given me an exclusive 10% discount off all products for my listeners. Just pop Mike10, M-I-C, the number 10, in the apply coupon field when you check out. Well, it warms the cockles of my hearts, and I'm sure all of us, when we hear heartwarming stories of success in the face of possible adversity. Today, I chat to Chris Wiley, the founder of So Successful, a company which trials and tests garden plants and garden products, which he set up just as the world headed into its first lockdown. Chris shares his story about how his So Successful business came about, how he got started in horticulture, and his journey along the way. Chris also tells us why this year, 2022, has been such a very special year for him. It's an incredible story involving hard work, determination, a friendship with the late, great Peter Seabrook, and a delightful story about how a posy of very, very special sweet peas travelled across London on the Underground to be presented to Her Majesty the Queen at her last Chelsea Flower Show earlier this year. And this episode was recorded a couple of months before the very sad passing of Her Majesty the Queen on September the 8th. I opened our chat by asking Chris what the company is, how it came about, and when.
So the business was formed in February 2020, just before the world shut down. So it was quite a scary, daunting, challenging time. But I'd been wanting to form the company for a few months prior to that, having gained knowledge, because it specializes in running independent plant and product trials. That was the main core of the business. So right. Plant breeders, obviously developing new plants, want to know that they will perform for the home gardener. So that's what I test for, as well as hard goods. Lots of companies introducing products in horticulture.
So it's got to have that horticultural link to
it. Yeah, it's got to have that link to it. So it's got to benefit plants or home gardening, whatever. So, that was the main aim of it, to test products and see how they perform, if they meet suppliers and manufacturers' expectations, etc. So that was the main core of it. And I formed it in February 2020. And obviously it's been picking up from there.
So how did, because that was literally a couple of months before we went into the first lockdown, how did that affect you and the business?
Well, I wasn't obviously prepared for anything like that to ever happen. So the business has been almost all self-funded. So savings I'd accumulated from obviously wanting to set up the company to actually doing it. A lot of my own money was put in that. And then when the lockdowns struck, I thought, where do I go with this now? I've formed this company. No one's really trading. What do I do? Thankfully, that the government opened garden centres and mail order was booming. So the business came back quite quickly. So I was quite happy for that to happen.
So this desire to trial plants and products, where did this come from? Because this is a bit of a new one for me and my listeners on the podcast, because we listen to people who talk about a nursery. So why this? Where did this interest come from, Chris?
So while I was studying at school, in 2009, I think it was, I had a part-time job at a local nursery called Harvey's Garden Plants. That was a nursery that exhibited at the flower shows, as well as doing garden landscaping, design, and had a nursery of its own. So that was where I got my love for plants, having sort of been interested in it from an early age with my grandparents. It's my granddad that got me into it.
So there was a love before. You didn't just end up in this job at the garden centre by chance. There was a love that drove that.
Yeah, I'd always loved growing plants. I didn't know much about them at that point, but I was helping my granddad with his... he was a sort of handyman. He'd done painting, decorating and gardening as well. And I sometimes went to help him with the gardening side of things and done lots of grass cutting. And I fell in love with it instantly. And then he helped me get this job at the nursery that was local to me at the time, which I went for an interview for. Well, it wasn't an interview. I went and turned up on the day and said, can I have a job? I got turned away. I think that was because I was too young, didn't have experience. And then funnily enough, one of my neighbours where I lived, she came across and said, Chris, I know you love gardening. I work in the tea room in the coffee shop at this place. Do you want me to ask him if he wants to interview you? I said, well, I've already been. He turned me down. So what could go wrong now? So anyway, he got me in for an interview and then the rest is history.
So you started. So what was your first job there?
So I was a nursery assistant. So I was only able to do one day at the weekends, government laws and everything. So I was doing the Saturday shift. I think that I started off only allowed to do 4 hours at the time. That gradually, when I got a bit older, progressed to 8 hours and then a full weekend, and then went into an apprenticeship with them.
Wow. So what did the apprenticeship involve? And at that point, had you got your eye on a career in horticulture and gardening?
My sights were firmly on the industry. I didn't want to turn back. I didn't want to explore anything else, really. It was in my blood, green fingers. My parents worked in agriculture, so it was only right that I'd done something similar to what they did.
So
it was always a love and a passion, and there was a drive for it.
So what did you do? So you went through your apprenticeship. How many years was the apprenticeship?
The apprenticeship took, I think that was a two-year course. I'd done level two in production horticulture.
Wow.
And then I went on to level three, which took probably a year or so after that.
So what next? Where did you go from there?
So I then, after the apprenticeship, I was taken on full time as a permanent member of staff, of which I loved. And yes, obviously horticulture is not the best paying job in the world.
No,
it's the most, what I think is the most fun job in the world. And doing what I love as doing for a hobby is also my job as well. So I like to mix those two up. And I was taken on full time, and then I was given more responsibilities, looking after Chelsea stock. So Chelsea that, I had that. I could give them that care, and that was quite a responsibility.
So this was looking after and maintaining the plants that were going to go to the flower shows.
Yeah. So it was always a display in the floral marquee, which they had every year. And usually they'd win gold every single year. So no pressure.
No, but none whatsoever.
But yeah, it was a small display, small circular display, which people always, when they went to Chelsea, they kind of knew about it. So they always made sure they went and visited it. And they had some quite big customers, what turned into customers, visit them and just fell in love with the display. So that was really, really fun.
And you would go along to the flower show to help set it up?
Yes, I remember, I can't remember which one was my first flower show, but whatever it was, I instantly fell in love and I kept begging to go back every single year to each of these flower shows, whether that be Chelsea, Hampton Court, Gardens, wherever. And I just couldn't get enough of it. And then when he invited me, my boss invited me to the press day. That was something else. So
yeah, I mean, Chelsea is quite addictive anyway, but the press day is just something very special, isn't it? We're very lucky to be able to go along. Can you remember your first press day? Who did you see?
I do remember it quite clearly. I met a few, because obviously I was sort of starstruck back then, a few celebrities, which I've been watching on TV and stuff. And when they visited the display, that was, it was life changing. I didn't think that would ever happen. A celebrity couldn't even talk to me. But no, I remember I bumped into Rob Brydon.
A regular.
We're both looking at a show garden. We turn around. Oh, sorry. Oh, you're Rob. but yeah, that was an experience.
So from that prestigious sort of event in your life, working and going to the Chelsea Flower Show, where did you go after the nursery? Because I know your time at the nursery came to an end and you moved on.
Yeah, so an unexpected turn of events was that my boss, Roger, at the time, he said to me, Chris, if you're serious about pursuing this as a career in horticulture, and you ultimately want to become manager or take over the nursery one day, you're going to need more experience that I can't give you. So I'm not trying to push you out, but if you want experience, you're going to have to see if there's somewhere else.
Wow, what a generous thing to have done, because it would have been very easy for him to have kept you there.
I know he didn't want to lose me and I didn't really want to go away, but if I wanted to further my career, then that was the opportunity. So he said, look, I'm happy for you to look at other jobs, see what's going, and let me know and keep in touch about what's going on. And so it was around about that time when I went to a gardening club talk with my grandma. It was by Michael Perry, who worked at...
sounds familiar.
Yeah, but I didn't really know of Michael at that time, but I went along to this talk. I thought, okay, it could be really good. But it turned out it was a brilliant talk, and I'm glad I went. Mm-hmm. Got talking to Michael at the end, and he offered me the chance to become one of their customer trialists, where you get half price plants and stuff and free exclusive previews of plants and just let them know how they perform. That was kind of where the trials thing began, where I was trialing out these new plants. And I said to him, Michael, are any jobs going at Thompson and Morgan by any chance? Because at the time they were only half an hour's drive away from where I was living. So it wasn't too far. He got in touch with his manager, and his manager came back to me and said, there's no jobs yet, but I'll keep you posted when there is. And a few weeks later, got an email to say, there's a job going on our trial site. It's for, I can't remember what they called it then. It was the horticulturalist at their trials ground. And it was basically working alongside their plant breeder. So I thought, what an exciting opportunity. So I applied, I went for the interview, and they more or less offered me the job on the spot and said, wow. Chris, this is for you. So so I went back to my then boss and said, Roger, I've just got a job at Thompson & Morgan, so I'll be leaving before that time.
Well, he did open the door for you to give you that opportunity. So you went to Thompson & Morgan. How long were you with Thompson & Morgan? And did you just have the same sort of role on the plant trials area, or did you experiment in other areas?
So on their breeding ground, they had lots of glass houses, lots of polytunnels, and there was a few acres of field where they just had plants just growing in rows, trialing them. And it was just everything I'd dreamed of had kind of come true. So I was there for 3 years working alongside Charles, who was their plant breeder, and he was just a bank of knowledge. He knew everything. There wasn't anything this guy didn't know about plants. So that was a real privilege to work alongside him.
And I guess you've got that opportunity with so much knowledge from him, the skills and his experience, to soak up that for yourself. And were you aware that this was, did you even have any idea at that point that I might do this myself one day, or were you just taking it day by day?
I started taking it day by day because obviously there was, how many staff was there? Probably up to a dozen members of staff working there, and they'd all been there, most of them, quite a long time. So I thought, ooh, well, it might be a bit difficult to try and fit in with these people. I don't want to go in all guns blazing saying I know what to do, blah, blah, blah. So it was a steady ride for at least the first year. Mm. And then I sort of started taking on more responsibilities, saying, look, Charles and the other people there, I said, look, I want to take more of an active role in working with these plants. What can you offer me? So they offered me a couple of different experiences. They offered me the chance to work and clean their seed, all the seed that was harvested and come in from various suppliers. I got the opportunity to do that, and I'm really glad I done that. That was really eye-opening, interesting. You don't know the kind of machines that you have to use to clean seeds.
Well, I was going to ask you, is that a machine job?
It's all well, I say it's all machines. It's 90% machines. And there's, I think they had half a dozen machines, all doing very different things. So whether that be cleaning the seed coats off of nasturtiums or sweet peas or just like with hellebore seed, for better germination, you have to kind of just lightly sand them to just get the edge off the seed. All sorts of jobs like that, and there are machines to do it, and it was, yeah, that was quite amazing.
That's incredible, because I guess when you buy your packet of seeds from whoever, you don't necessarily, even me as a horticulturist myself, you don't think about the process that they will have gone through before they get into that packet. That's incredible.
Yeah, well, I saw it from start to finish, and it's a case of harvesting the seed, drying it out, and sending it to a machine, the best machine for the job. That person being quite careful not to damage the seed, like with marigolds. When you're cleaning marigolds, it's quite easy to rub off their, they're called tails, but like feathery like ends to them.
Yeah,
you can quite easily split them, so it's quite a precise job. But yeah, I loved it, and they got me doing that, and I was put in charge of their product trials coordinator as my role, and I was put in charge of overseeing all of their plant trials that Charles was working on, documenting everything in spreadsheets, just taking photos, regular updates every week. I was counting the heads on certain plants, how many flowers it produced, the heights, everything that you don't think goes into producing a plant, I was doing on that plant.
So there's a lot of work behind the scenes to document the information that you're recording, spreadsheets. So some of it is desk-based and some of it is manual.
Yeah, so I think I'd say it was half and half. I was spending half my time sort of on the laptop just inputting information, and you can combine the two as well, because they were laptops. You can take them out to the plants, and while you're working with the plant and counting and measuring stuff, you're inputting it on the laptop as well. So everything is controlled on a database for everyone to see. Whoever wants to look at it can get that information to use on their website or wherever they like.
So what next then? So you had two different roles there on top of the roles you'd been doing before. What came next?
So I moved on and worked there. Their then managing director, Paul Hansord, he was with the company for 30 odd years. He announced his retirement from the company, and he was the one who loved bringing new plants and products to the market. And I was working for him while working with Thompson Morgan. I was working at weekends in his garden, in maintenance and stuff, because he wasn't too far from where I lived. And he offered me the chance and said, Chris, I'm still going to be introducing new plants and products, but I need someone to just take it on full time and just do everything that basically I was doing at Thompson & Morgan. So he said, do you want that opportunity? So I said, yes, please. So
wow. That's incredible.
So that's where I then went. I worked with him full time for 2 years.
So he had his own setup, did he?
Yeah, so he's got quite a large garden, which he just filled with trials material, whether that be testing new plants for products he was launching, or just anything and everything. It was there, and there's some really exciting products now coming through from him. Mm. But I was there full time 2 years. Then I thought, well, hang on, I can do this as an actual business. I can do this for other people. Surely other companies want this sort of stuff done. There are only one, maybe two other companies, large companies, which do this sort of thing for a premium. So if you're a plant breeder, you don't have thousands of pounds to spend on trialing things. So no. I thought, hang on, there surely must be a market for this. So that's when I formed my company, still working closely with Paul, obviously. So that's where it went.
So can I just ask, Paul's job, you say, was he was introducing new plants. Where do these plants come from? How do they get introduced? We often hear about plant introductions. So where do they come from? Who goes out looking for them, or do people send them? How does it work?
So this is working closely with plant breeders. So right. These are people who've spent years trying to improve stock. So whether that be anything from bedding plants like petunias to perennials, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, which even people like me, we don't know is going on until we start getting in, speaking to people, and you see the developments that are coming through. And that's where he knew he had a lot of contacts, and people were getting in touch with him and saying, look, Paul, we've got this new plant. We don't know where to start. We haven't got enough stock for a retailer to start stocking it yet. So can you help us? And that's where it sort of begins.
So this seed of an idea germinated, every pun intended, in your mind, you could do this on your own. So how did it go from that idea to actually being a business?
So I was quite fortunate to not only Paul, but a few other people who I worked with previously were all helping me with knowledge on different areas. Because I'd obviously never run my own business before. It was always I'm quite a risk taker, and I like seeing things through. If they don't work out, so be it. At least I've tried it. So I was all going in all guns blazing, like, I need to sort out this company ASAP. It needs to start next month, blah, blah, blah. People were trying to calm me down a bit, saying it's a bit of a slower process than that. But that's where it went.
So the company was set up. So you started trialing plants. Now, for you, how does that actually work? What do you receive? What volumes of plants, and what do you do with them?
So I've been working with a number of plant breeders and plant breeders agents who recommend me. And I will basically take on seedlings or stock seed or whatever from these breeders, and I will see that through from I'll germinate the seed to pricking it out, potting it on, evaluating it, and sometimes breeders want to come over and either collect a few of the plants to take back for pollinations, or they do the pollinations at the glass house. But what I haven't touched on is that where I'm working, where I'm based, is Thompson and Morgan's old trial grounds where I used to work.
Oh no, that's incredible. Who would have guessed?
So never did I see that coming in a million years.
So how did that happen then? They got rid of them, or?
So where I once worked and left, they closed down that site probably about two to three years after I left them. It wasn't redundant for long until I took it on, but they decided, look, we don't want the expense of keeping this running. We'd rather focus on our core business rather than trying to introduce lots of new things. And they'd put the glass houses up. They only rented the land. So I got in touch with the landlord and said, look, have you got the land spare? Can I rent it off you? And she said, well, we've got rid of the polytunnels and stuff because they're keeping horses and everything now, but all the glass houses have remained, and she just wanted to see them used.
So what expanse of glass houses have you got there then? What did you take on?
there is half an acre of glasshouses.
Cool.
So it's quite a big operation.
Mm.
There's a lot of space for growth inside, excuse the pun.
Yeah. We'll pack them in today.
And there's also a fair bit of land outside, hard standing for pots and stuff when you don't want them in the glasshouse in high summer.
Right, so two things there. We'll come back to the high summer bit in just a moment. But there was no sort of like gradually building this business. You were in at the deep end with that expanse of space to work with. Daunting? Any sleepless nights? Because I just thinking about it, I'm getting a bit of a queasy stomach.
Many sleepless nights.
I bet.
It was a real struggle. I was working 7 days a week trying to set this up, help from friends and family. And I thought, well, I've started. I've got to see it through. I can't give up. I've got to keep going, keep motivated. So I was working tirelessly, not getting much sleep at all.
Yeah.
Obviously, yes, the glasshouses were there, brilliant. But these glasshouses, they're nearly 40 plus years old now. So they need maintenance. And there were things after Thompson and Morgan had vacated that site, there were things that needed updating or replacing. And it was a mammoth task. And I'm grateful to everyone who helped me.
So you're there now. The glasshouses are brought up to standard. You're working away there. Now, we touched on the summer. Certainly here on the South Coast, and I'm sure the same with you up there. Very hot, very dry. We actually had the highest temperature recorded going back a couple of weeks ago, 40.2 or maybe something higher than that even. How are you coping with the watering and the impact on the plants that you're trialing?
So I remember when I went for the interview at Thompson & Morgan's Trials Ground, one of my very first questions to them was, are you using mains or rainwater? Because I've always had a sort of sustainable side to me. I've always wanted to be as environmentally friendly as possible. And that was one of my first questions. And their answer was, no, we don't harvest rainwater. It's only mains, which I thought was a bit odd. So when I moved into these glass houses, no rainwater is being collected. There is a big tank full of mains water. I thought, that can't be right. So yes, I've been using mains water up until this point, so I've got everything established. But my goal is now to try and harvest, because you think of that expanse of glass,
exactly.
There's a lot of rain come off that. And it all just soaks away into the ground. I think, what a waste. So
absolutely.
So that's my plan for hopefully this year, maybe next year, is to start trying to harvest that rainwater.
Good for you. And what about temperatures inside the glasshouses and the actual growing of the plants? Because it really has been quite a sustained period of drought and high temperatures.
Yeah, well, thankfully, a lot of the stock that I work with currently can be moved outside in high summer. There's not much shade where I am. It was basically built on land to be exposed to all elements.
Mm.
We don't get much rain where we are. I think we're in a kind of trap in the countryside where you get heavy rain on either side, but none where I am. So so it's been, well, we haven't seen rain like you. We haven't seen rain for months. It's just been a struggle to keep on top of everything. The most rain we've had was a little drizzle one night, and that was it. It's not
yeah.
wet the ground.
Same here, about half a thimbleful, if that. Chris, gosh, there's so many questions I could ask just about that. I'll have to have you back one day. We'll have to have a further conversation. I want to talk about your year. 2022 has been a particularly special year for you. Tell us why.
So another thing I could never see coming. It was never on my roadmap. It was never on my business plan that I was going to have the year I've had. But basically, long story short, 4 or 5 years ago, I got to know the late Peter Seabrook very well. I volunteered one day for his garden at Floral Fantasia at Hyde Hall. He was planting, I forget what he was planting, pansies or something, but But I went to offer my help because he was looking for just a handful of volunteers to get everything planted. So I went and I thought, well, if I go, I might be able to get sort of in contact with Peter and see if he can give me any advice on the new business. Because this was very close to me. This is while I was working for Paul. This is very close to me thinking I need to do this myself. So I thought, right, I'm going to go. I'm going to help Peter out and I'll get to know him. So that's what I done. And he kind of took a shine to me there and then. And ever since then, we were talking quite regularly. He was sending me emails saying, Chris, I've got this idea and this idea if you want to do this and blah, blah, blah.
So had you shared at that point what your plan could be? You had?
I had, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd said to him, look, Peter, I'm wanting to do this. Can you give me any advice and pointers? And that's what he was doing. And he said, well, I've got connections and contacts, which I think could be of benefit to you. Mm-hmm. So he was sharing those with me. And he passed away in January this year, which completely unexpected.
Yeah, it was a shock.
It was really quite a sad time. Mm. But just before, well, the year before that, I'd grown. He'd asked me, I was quite honoured to have grown all of his verbenas for Chelsea Flower Show. This was the year that Chelsea was postponed to September. So one of these verbenas was new, that was in memory of his wife who passed away with COVID a couple of years beforehand. And these were plants that were very close to his heart and he trusted me to grow them. So I'd grown them for him and they were exhibited at the show and it was quite a success, thankfully.
So can I just ask, Chris, where did you grow those plants for him? Because you didn't have the business then.
No, this was a year or two later. Something like that. So
yeah,
a couple of years after I first got to know him, he asked me to grow these plants in the glasshouse. That was one of my very first jobs I ever did in the glasshouse. Whether he was my first client, I think he was my first client, Peter.
Wow. That's good on the CV, isn't it? Peter Seabrook, yeah. First client.
Yeah. So I was quite, well, it was an honor to grow plants for someone who was so well respected in the industry. Then when he passed away, I had this new sweet pea, which I was growing. Just a little backstory. A couple of years beforehand, I started growing a lot of sweet peas for seed production for Phil at Seedlinks. He wanted to bulk up his stock seed, so I was growing loads for him. And obviously, you always get the odd rogue or two in sweet peas, but there was one that stood out to Phil, to me, to Peter when he visited me, because Peter's very, well, his favourite flower was the sweet pea, the first one he ever grew. This variety stood out to all of us. So I can't take credit for breeding this sweet pea, but I can take credit for obviously growing this sweet pea and collecting the seed. And Peter said to me, one of the last things he ever said to me was, Chris, you need to packet that sweet pea. That needs to go in a seed packet. So that's what I did. And I got Phil's permission to do that. And I named it after Peter Seabrook with Peter's family's permission. And the aim is to raise money for Floral Fantasia, RHS Hyde Hall. So I got in touch with various people and the RHS, and it was decided that packets should be sold and £1 from every sale would be donated to Floral Fantasia. So that was my way of giving back to what Peter had given me.
Amazing. Amazing. Now, the sweet pea story doesn't quite stop there, does it?
No, it gets even more exciting than that. I was asked if I wanted to exhibit it at Chelsea Flower Show. So there was a memorial stand for Peter because being that the Queen's Jubilee year, Peter always tried to go bigger and better on his displays because he had displays at Chelsea every year. Mm. He always wanted to go bigger and better. And obviously he couldn't do that this year, but everyone else wanted to on his behalf. They wanted to see it through. So on his memorial display, they said to me, look, Chris, if you want to exhibit the sweet pea, now is your opportunity. So I took it there. I was told to take a small posy as well, made up should the Queen arrive that day. because Peter, every single year, presented a posy of flowers to the Queen.
Mm.
He was a royalist. He loved the royals.
And, yeah.
He was one of the Queen's best friends. Mm. So no pressure there, being asked to create a posy of new sweet peas to hand them over in Peter's memory. Anyway,
can I just ask, this posy, how long did it take you to put this posy? Were you conscious of the blooms and they all had to be just perfect?
So I, the day before I went up to Chelsea on press day, I think it was the Sunday, I was down at the glasshouse picking the best sweet pea stems I could possibly find, because thankfully they were all in flower at that time anyway.
Thank goodness. So
just picking hundreds of stems, and out of those hundreds of stems, you choose the best.
Yeah.
And I passed this responsibility on to my wife.
This is Brittany, who has just joined the business.
She has. She's just joined the business full time.
Now, that's cowardly. A female touch.
Yeah, yeah. I knew she could do a much better job of producing this posy than I could. So yeah. So she decided on ribbons and the best colour ribbon. It matched the flowers, which was all colour coordinated. And I wanted that. So so anyway, she made this the night before. I took not only a big bunch of sweet peas to have in a vase down, taking this posy on the train. So really early in the morning, I think it was a 5 or 6 o'clock start in the morning, and almost rush hour, I was taking all these sweet peas down to London. And you can imagine being on the tube with all these sweet peas. And remember, they're highly scented as well. So
yes.
They're quite fragrant. So I think the whole carriage could smell these and wonder, what is this madman doing?
If only they knew.
Yeah, well, I think if they'd have seen the news later on that day, they would have realised exactly why. And unfortunately, on press day, majority of people are kicked out at 3 o'clock for security reasons.
Yes, I was.
And yeah, it's not something you want to leave, because no. You know the royals may be attending.
Yeah,
but obviously for security you've got to. And I'd already planned my journey home. I thought the Queen's not going to come. I've got this bunch of flowers, which yeah, it may.
But it was in question this year, wasn't it, with the Queen's sort of ill health? It was a little bit. Will she come along? Will someone else come along in her place? Carry on.
So in the run-up to Chelsea, obviously the Queen was backing out of a few events and she wasn't able to attend them for obvious reasons. I thought, this might not go to plan and the Queen might not get that final posy from Peter. So I didn't think she would be attending. I thought one of the royals might get the posy. So anyway, I'd planned my train journey home. I was on the train at the time going back to where I live in Ipswich. And I had a message through later that day to say, Chris, the Queen has been and she's got your posy. And that I can't begin to tell you the excitement and joy that brought.
I remember seeing the pictures, because it was pictured in the papers, this picture of the Queen holding your bouquet of sweet peas, your posy of sweet peas. How amazing.
I think her words were delightful. She'd had them in their hands, smelt them, and she fell in love. And I you could see in her mobility buggy that she was in, her the lady that was sitting on the back, she took hold of the sweet peas for the Queen. And I think I just hope they ended up in the palace.
I'm sure they did. I can remember seeing her smelling the sweet peas. So those people on the train that day, I wonder if they actually thought, gosh, I saw those on the train this morning. The story doesn't stop there though, does it?
No, it goes even one step further than that. So I launched this sweet pea at Chelsea for the public to see for the first time. I, for some unknown reason, I don't know why, and everyone else forgot as well, we didn't think about entering it into the new Plant of the Year competition at Chelsea. But BBC Gardeners World Live was a couple of months later, and that had a new plant competition. So I thought, and well, there was also another memorial display for Peter, a massive display with pictures over the years, an old-fashioned TV camera, and it specialised in new plants. New plants was Peter's thing as well.
Yeah,
he loved them. So I thought, okay, I'm going to enter the sweet pea into the new plant competition. There was, I forget how many entries there was. There was a good 20, 30 odd entries. I was there for the evening before judging. Well, I think judging was that evening, but I was there before the day before that they announced the winner.
Yeah.
So I'd left again at that point. I'd left that show, unfortunately, and I got a phone call the next morning to say, Chris, your sweet pea has just won the new plant award. And just unbelievable.
Chris, you've got to stop booking the train home. You've got to just delay that next year. Delay it for a day.
The phone call said, Chris, they're awarding the prize in the next 20 minutes. So unless you can get from Ipswich to Birmingham in 20 minutes, and I don't want to be responsible for your speeding tickets, then can we accept this award on your behalf? And I said, please do.
Oh, that's amazing. So quite a story, an amazing story, an amazing friendship with Peter Seabrook. Zoe Ball's ordered the sweet pea, so we hear. So can we still order the sweet pea? If so, where do we go?
Yeah, so the sweet peas are in limited supply this year in seed packets, but they're sold via, well, they're being distributed via a local company to me called Precious Plants. And they are selling on my behalf with £1 per packet going towards Floral Fantasia. I'm currently in talks. I've already decided on who's going to be selling seed of this sweet pea next year. Mr. Fothergill's are doing that for me.
Wow.
But I'm in discussions at the moment with who's going to produce the plants for sale. So when you buy mail order, you can buy the young plants and you'll be able to do that. So those discussions are still ongoing. But at the moment, you can buy packets of sweet peas from, I think it's precious-plants.co.uk/sunps.
Sunps, S-U-N-P-S.
Yes.
I'll put a link in the show notes if anybody wants to go and buy a packet of these beautiful sweet peas. We haven't described the colour of them. Tell us what they look like. We've talked about they're very fragrant.
So they're a brilliant, they're a frilly lilac type colour. So they start lilac or purple, however you see them. And they fade to a kind of light blue as they age. But their fragrance doesn't disappear. So they've got this nice frilly texture to them. And they're just remarkable. I spoke to various people in the sweet pea world and said, look, is this new? Can I say it's new? So I trialed various other similar varieties. And it's completely unique. There are similar varieties, similar colours and frilliness out there, but none smell as good as this one.
So there you go. It's on my list. It's definitely on my list. So an incredible 2022. What's 2023 got in store for you? Any plans? You talked earlier about a business plan. Have you got things that you want to do professionally with the business?
So at the moment, obviously having worked in one company specializing it, I want to go down the mail order route. Because I'd done something for one company last year, growing plug plants, and I was doing direct dispatch. So I was not only growing them in the glasshouse, but I was then dispatching them as well. And I loved that process. And I just love the thought of being able to introduce new plants to customers, because there's no go-to website where you can find new plants. And especially plants that have been grown sustainably. So at the moment, you can buy plants from many different online retailers.
Mm.
But you can't buy, the majority of them, you can't buy without having some sort of plastic involved, whether that be a plastic pot or plastic packaging or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And many, at the time, a few months ago when I thought of this, were grown in peat still. Many are now peat free. But I thought, well, what if you can buy plants that are plastic free, peat free, pesticide free, everything you could possibly want for a sensible price? We all know that going eco-friendly with products does end up costing a bit more.
More, yeah.
But if you're helping the environment, just helping the world out, just that one little bit, then that's
a small price.
A good thing, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So that's what I want to do. So I've been working on a new website and just had a marketing agency create a new brand for me, which focuses on my story of the sweet pea. So the logo design for this new website, which is called the Sustainable Plant Store.
Yeah.
So it's sustainableplantstore.com, which goes live in October this year. The logo is centered around that lilac sweet pea. So it's a nice story as well.
Oh, we shall look forward to that, because the podcast will probably come out at about that time. So that would be lovely. So because I had a sneaky look, but there's obviously not much to see there at the moment. So I shall look forward to having a look at that. Chris, I wish you a very successful, so successful 2023. It's been a pleasure having you along today and chatting to us. I will have you back at some point, because so many more questions I've got written down, just not enough time. So thank you for your time, Chris. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Wow, what an inspirational young man, and what a great story. So just to recap on a few things from our chat. Firstly, to order the exquisite frilly lilac sweet pea Peter Seabrook, head to precious-plants.co.uk, and with 12 seeds per packet, the price includes delivery and a £1 charity donation to the Floral Fantasia Garden at RHS Hyde Hall. Chris's So Successful website is so-successful.com, and you'll find loads of information there about Chris and the business. And the new website, sustainableplantstore.com, is due to launch in October. So do head over and have a look for more information about Chris and this incredible company, and look out for his plastic-free, pesticide-free and peat-free plants at a sensible price. My thanks to Chris for coming along to chat with me this week. As I say, what an incredible story, and I know we all wish Chris and wife Brittany all the very best for an equally successful 2023. Well, folks, that's it for today, so thank you so much for joining me. And we have just a few more episodes left to go before we reach the end of Series 4, so do make sure you have followed and subscribed to make sure you don't miss out on any of the horticultural fun here on the Mike the Gardener Gardening Podcast. And I will see you, as always, next week. Bye-bye for now. Bye-bye.